There's a cold silence that we don't dare speak. There's a wall between us and a river so deep. We keep pretending that there's nothing wrong. There's a cold of silence and it can't go on.
Hi folks, I'm Alan Watt and this is Cutting Through the Matrix on the 22nd of June 2009. For newcomers, look into cuttingthroughthematrix.com website. And on that page, the front page, you'll see all the other sites I have. You should really pick one to be your favorite and use it for downloading the shows. That way it spreads bandwidth. It gives the servers less a chance to hassle me for all the downloads that come from their particular server. It spreads it, you see. And also, I'm sure in the very near future, there'll be more trouble coming down the pike from some of the mainstream servers. Therefore, one day you won't see it on cuttingthroughthematrix.com. It'll be gone. But if you have the other sites noted, you can keep downloading from them. You can choose also from cuttingthrough.jenkness.com, very dependable site, cuttingthroughthematrix.net.us.ca, also Alan Watt, cuttingthroughthematrix.ca, and also the European site, which has all the audios, and it also has transcripts of quite a lot of them written in the various languages of Europe. So that's what you have to choose from. In the meantime, as I say, there's so many articles coming out now about mainstream servers being jockeyed along by governments to comply, and we also have PSYOPs as well, and the cyber cops as well on top of us. So things are gradually coming down. People have had their sites pulled already in different countries across the planet. It's happening quietly at the moment. Now, those who listen to my show help to keep me going if they donate to me. If they don't, one day you'll turn it on and I won't be there. It's as simple as that. That's how it works, because I'm brought to you by you. You're the listener. I don't ask for money from the advertisers. What you hear on the show goes straight to RBN. That pays for time for the show. It pays for the technicians and their equipment and all the rest of it. So it's up to you to keep it going. And I try to stay out of the usual mainstream, what they call patriot movement, because, to be honest with you, I only came into this whole thing a long time ago because I saw where it was going. It was going in circles, and they didn't see the big picture. And therefore, I came out, and I think I helped. I did help to shape the direction it's gone in since then, across the board. You can also go into cuttingthroughthematrix.com or any of the sites. You'll find out how to donate through PayPal. Personal check is fine in Canada and the US. Western Union abroad, there's even MoneyGrams being used. So that's fine with me. Those who get the CDs passed around because they're burned and they don't have a computer, you can also get in touch with me if you write to Alan Watt, Site 41, Box 4, Esther, Ontario, Canada. Esther is E-S-T-A-I-R-E, Ontario, Canada. The postal code is P as in Peter, the number 3, E as in Elizabeth, 4, N as in Nora, number 1, P-3-E-4-M-1. And you'd also buy that, for which I have for sale, on the website as well. You'll find out quite easily if you go into the site. But there's an enormous archive of shows I've done, where I cover a broad range of histories, trying to show the people that truly were kept like mushrooms, were kept in the dark, and fed you-know-what. That's bovine fecal matter. And that's the job of the media that takes over from your education. And by media, it's all media, including fictional works as well. In fact, some of the most important predictive programming you get is through fiction and dramas and soaps. I think Jack C. Law was the expert on that when he talked about propaganda and how all hospitals and cop shows are all propaganda. Back with more after these messages.
This is RBN. The Republic Broadcasting Network.
Hi, folks. This is Alan Watt, and we're cutting through the matrix. The way we're treated truly is like you treat children, very, very young children, when they ask questions that you think they aren't prepared to receive an answer for. And that is how government treats us with its various policies. We're kept as though we were children. You can't tell the children the bad news, especially if you have intentions which are going to upset them. Therefore, just like pedophiles, they lie to you. They lie to you with nice smiling faces, and there's no lie big enough that they won't tell. It's that easy. It's truly that easy. And many books have been written about authoritarianism and how people succumb to it and why and how they're manipulated. It also takes a sort of symbiosis between the victim and the perpetrator when it comes to mass indoctrination, mass manipulation, and getting the public to go along with various agendas to change the whole of society, which has been changed many times in the past, especially culture-wise. That's an old trick. And since about the 1950s onwards, the cultures of the Western Hemisphere were under absolute attack. Not from outside influences, because we see there were already global, there's already a global authority in the 50s. It was set up at the end of World War II under the United Nations. Every country that signed on signed away its ability to be independent. You should check it up for yourself and look into the San Francisco meeting. See what they signed away. But they also knew that it would be very, very difficult to bring in their long-awaited global governance, something that the Royal Institute of International Affairs was set up to do in the first place, and the Council on Foreign Relations, which is the same thing, only an American branch. That was always their goal, to set up a world government. But in order to do so, especially to do it the way that Karl Marx wanted it done, which was first a united Europe, followed by United Americas, and then a conglomerate of the Pacific Rim region, then they knew they'd have to literally try and alter the cultures to bring them together, to blend them together into this new culture, not a melting pot of the old, but really bring it into a new culture with each block, which eventually could be brought into the main world block without any problem. And again, that's what the Rees Commission found when they had the congressional investigation into the big foundations. The book Foundations, Their Power and Their Influence is an excellent book to read on that. It goes through the Rees Commission and Norman Dodd's report, where they were told by the heads of the big foundations that sponsor many hundreds of other foundations across the planet, front foundations, and 1,000 NGOs, non-governmental organizations. They found that their job was to change the culture in the West so much that it would blend seamlessly with that of the Soviet Union, which tells you also they knew when the Soviet Union would stop being the Soviet Union and become Russia again. They also knew what kind of system this new conglomerate would be. It's not hard to tell if you create the culture to go along with it. And remember, in the 1960s, they had the international meetings in Britain, held in London, for the Royal Institute for International Affairs, Council on Foreign Relations, where in mainstream media, they said their job at these big meetings was to decide which country was given the premiership for creating the world culture. And they looked towards the British studios, the old Pine studios and so on, and they decided, no, it wasn't enough. They'd have to use Hollywood. And not just Hollywood, but the entire culture creation industry. That's music, drama, everything. Stage drama as well. And it's been done. Perfectly. It's been done so well with the aid of television, which has been used for that purpose since it was first given to the general public. And getting back to Jack Zielow, as he said, there's not a TV show to do with hospitals, anything to do with those services That's health and policing. These were services at one time. Because the whole old idea was to bring them up to the status of authorities. And that was the job of dramas on television, to give you a false perception of what they were really all about. Everyone knows, if you watch the fictional versions of hospitals, every person in there and the staff knows exactly what they're doing, and they don't make mistakes. It's perfect. They're so holy, they walk on water. They just know what to do. Always the right thing. And the same with the cops. No matter what the bad guy's done, and he's always been a really, really bad guy, you have all these teams of detectives chasing him through all kinds of hell to get that bad guy. And that's what you think cops are all about. Which is completely fictional. It's propaganda. The police forces have been built up to army status over a long period of time, maybe 20 years, in preparation for what's coming down the pike in the very, very near future. Because, as I say, the reports from the think tanks for the US and the British military both came up with the same agendas for the next 30 years, same forecasts, rioting, escalating riots, right down to even having to use basically small-scale thermonuclear weapons on mass riots. Now, they don't sit and dream this stuff up because of nothing else to do, although they have a lot of time on their hands, that's for sure. But they mean what they say. Now, how would they know that there's riots coming up? You have to go through their PDFs. I've got them on my site. Go into the archive section, the Department of Defense. And you'll find out why it's supposed to happen. Food shortages will happen because food now is in the hands of a small monopoly. A monopoly. They own the world's food supply. That was always the plan, by the way, because the United Nations, once again, likes to portray itself as a big do-gooder that goes around handing out candy bars across the world to poor, starving children. Has very little to do with that kind of image at all. They are the most authoritarian body set up to be an authoritarian body the world has ever seen. It is not a democratic institution. Its job is eventually to rule over the people, and you will do as you're told. A long time ago, they decided at the top, and the Club of Rome verified this in their own books, the First Global Revolution, that democracy would have to go. We are now in the post-democratic era. Democracy, they said, had too many conflicting parties to get any peace or get anything done. And obviously, since it's an agenda at stake here, they have to get things done. Therefore, they would have to go with a parallel government. That's what Margaret Thatcher talked about. She said she belonged to it. Professor Carol Quigley, who was a mentor of Bill Clinton, also said the same thing in Tragedy and Hope. The Council on Foreign Relations is only one branch of the parallel government. Thatcher said all ex-prime ministers and presidents, high bureaucrats, in all states and countries are members of it because they all know each other. And they can get things done behind the scenes without public scrutiny. They also don't have to answer to the public for anything that they do. And the Club of Rome said the system they favored the most was a collectivist society, communism. Communism was the easiest way. And the only way you can get it going is under the guise of warfare. Warfare or terrorism is the same thing, you see. You bring all the same functions that you use in warfare because the public will go along with things. They'll bend down more and do what they're told for peace and security for all. So therefore, the old slogan, we're all in it together, is back up again everywhere you look. We're all in it together. That's what they had everywhere in the movie Brazil, the comedy spoof on a totalitarian society, which the author certainly knew was coming down the pike. But we're treated like children, as I say, with every darn thing that's given to us. A little bit at a time. Just feed them a little. When a baby's crying, you'll see how they feed, the mother feeds the child. It's a little bit at a time. And if it's too much, the baby bubbles it out. And she'll wait a little while longer and try it again. And that's what they do with us, you see. The security cameras, remember, were just going to go up at crossroads for traffic accidents and people flying across the red lights. Now they're everywhere, everywhere, because it's world strategy. None of us, you see, can be expected to behave ourselves. We're all potentially criminals. And from the humanist point of view, that's true. From the psychologist's point of view, that's true, because they all believe in the same thing, that we're just an animal, you see. And under the right circumstances, you're capable of committing anything. That's how they judge the whole of society. Remember, too, if you're a psychopath judging society, he's going to see you as he sees himself, because he is capable of doing anything. Therefore, the only way you can treat children who will possibly commit a crime someday is to make sure they're in a prison, a straitjacket, and they're monitored 24 hours a day. That was also in Psychology Today, the big psychological magazine, years ago. They wanted eventually cameras in everyone's home watching everything they did. And guess what? A lot of people are doing it voluntarily with their webcams, thinking it's fun. What do you think all those reality shows were about, with the youngsters all thrown together in the big houses and cameras everywhere? Next thing you knew, youngsters were emulating that and putting it up on the web, what they were doing. Where did they get out that from? It's from television. Why would they sink so much money on television into showing that? To make the children copy them, that's why. Monkey see, monkey do. Back with more after this break.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Hi folks, I'm Alan Watt. We're cutting through the matrix, discussing how we're treated like children. And we have to be, from the big boys' point of view. You can't tell the public the truth. They couldn't have told us the truth 30 years ago, 40 years ago. They certainly could never have implemented the kind of security and snooping they've done on the average person 20 or 30 years ago. The public wouldn't have stood for it. Wouldn't have stood for it. But little by little, you get them changed, because you change those things in their environment. Of course, the TV itself will change you. It's behavior modification, because it's in your environment and people are staring at the thing all the time. You do it through mainly fiction, occasional news blurbs, and little by little, you've been brought from there to there. And so the new there is quite normal. And you never reasoned through any of it. It just became normal through time, gradualism. You can do anything with a society with gradualism, if you have the power to do so. Here's an article I read on the 11th of this month. It's from the Telegraph. EU security proposals are dangerously authoritarian. The European Union is stepping up efforts to build an enhanced pan-European system of security and surveillance, which critics have described as dangerously authoritarian. It's the 10th of June it was published. It says here, this proposal would create an EU ID card register, internet surveillance systems, satellite surveillance, automated exit entry border systems, operate by machines reading biometrics and risk profiling systems. Well, guess what? It's all exactly what's happening in Canada and the States, and has been since the 90s, actually, with a clear pass system. Europe's justice ministers will hold talks on the domestic security policy and surveillance network proposals, known in Brussels circles as the Stockholm Programme, on July the 15th, with the aim of finishing work on the EU's first ever internal security policy by the end of 2009. Quite something, eh? It's quite something. The aim, according to Jacques Barot, the security commissioner, they love to have commissioners. It's like commissars, isn't it? The EU. They call them commissioners. That's where the word commissar is. Yesterday, publicly declared the aim was to develop a domestic security strategy for the EU, once regarded as a strictly national home affairs area of policy. National frontiers should no longer restrict our activities, he said. Internationalism. But, you know, the last holdout really was the States, not because the States was really any different, it was the States was being used since it took over the job from Britain, especially the payments for all this, through their taxes and grants and so on. The US has been paying to bring in the New World Order since it took over its role from Britain. It has been since World War One. And the League of Nations was set up. You see, the UN, the US set up the League of Nations and funded that too. That became the United Nations. And now that the job of the US is almost complete, they're knocking, as I've said before many times for years, when you're finishing off the job of standardizing the world in the Middle East and what's left. The only places that are left are a few countries in the Middle East. They'll be pulling the rug from you under your feet at home, to make you blend in with the flattened world that's created. Because those in charge of the U.S. were always internationalists, you see. And they don't see the peasant in the U.S. any different from the peasant in Britain or the peasant in China. Not if you're superior in your gene pool and you're more evolved than others. And that's what they really believe at the top. They truly believe this stuff. And you better be very scared, because these people who really believe it have accumulated incredible wealth, which is power in this system. Therefore, they can create their kind of world with or without our consent. And they've been planning for both. So in the U.S., they're really catching up fast now. Because, see, Bush was put in the last time to get the whole ball rolling for totalitarianism. And Obama's been put in to sign all the international agreements that were shelved over the years. And he's just signing a dozen per day or more. This is from the Los Angeles Times. Lancaster, Pennsylvania keeps a close eye on itself. It is a vast and growing web of security cameras monitors a city of 55,000 people operated by a private group of self-appointed gatekeepers. There's been surprisingly little outcry. It's the June the 21st, 2009. It says, the historic town where America's founding fathers plotted during the Revolution and Milton Hershey later crafted his first chocolates, now boasts another distinction. It may become the nation's most closely watched small city. Some 165 closed-circuit TV cameras will soon provide live, round-the-clock scrutiny of nearly every street, park, and other public space used by the 55,000 residents and the town's many tourists. That's more outdoor cameras than are used by many major cities, including San Francisco and Boston. Unlike anywhere else, cash-strapped Lancaster outsourced its surveillance to a private non-profit group that hires civilians to tilt, plan, and zoom the cameras and call the police. And I'll be back with more after this break.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Hi, folks. I'm Alan Watt, and this is Cutting Through the Matrix, reading an article from the Los Angeles Times on Lancaster, Pennsylvania. But they're putting in all these cameras, and actually got them in, and probably putting more in. It says here, it says they're putting in more than major cities. including San Francisco and Boston, unlike anywhere else, cash-strapped Lancaster outsourced its surveillance to a private, non-profit group. Now, I'd love to know who they are, or at least who's putting out the cash. Now, the feds gave them $2,000, apparently, to get it rolling. But are there some foundations at work here, too? Someone had to set it up and hire the civilians and all the other volunteers. These volunteers aren't even screened by police to watch everyone else. It says they call police if they spot suspicious activity. No government agency is directly involved. Perhaps most surprising, the near-saturation surveillance of a community that saw 4 murders last year has sparked little public debate about whether the benefits for law enforcement outweigh the loss of privacy. Now, this is what Lancaster's police chief says. It takes the police chief to say the obvious, although he's not against it, obviously. He's saying the obvious. Years ago, there's no way we could do this. That's what I said. See, they could have done this years ago. Years ago, there's no way we could do this. Now, why can they do it now? Why is that? What happened to the people over the years? Well, they watched so much fiction and cops busting down doors that they really believe that crime is rampant everywhere. And it's within the limits of law to smash down doors without warrants and all that kind of stuff. But they really have been trained that living is just a scary thing to do. It's a scary thing to live. We need all of this intrusion. We've been trained. You train people incrementally over time to accept this. So here's the police chief saying that. This is what he says, too. It brings to mind Big Brother, George Orwell, and 1984. It's just funny how Americans have softened on these issues. No kidding. He says, no one talks about it, agrees Scott Martin, a Lancaster County Commissioner, who wants to expand the program. Well, he's obviously got friends that help to warm his hands, I'd say. Because people feel safer, he says. People feel safer. Those who are law-abiding citizens, they don't have anything to worry about. Now, I've got articles repudiating all this stuff, or with refute, because there's a whole bunch of psychology goes with this kind of indoctrination. It stops people from being healthy and spontaneous. When you're on camera all the time, you don't behave normally at any time. They know this too. Perhaps we should put these characters on camera all the time and watch them. After all, they've got jobs over you. Why don't we watch them all the time? Those are the ones we should be worried about. It says a few dozen people attended 4 community meetings held last spring to discuss what sponsors called this exciting public safety initiative. But opposition has grown since big red bulbs which shield the video cameras began appearing on corner after corner. Mary Pat Donnellan, head of Mission Research, a local software company, vowed to move if she finds one on her block. I don't want to live like that, she said. I'm not afraid, and I don't need to be under surveillance. So there are people, you see, that don't like it at all. No one has the right to know who goes in and out of my front door, agreed David Moore, a laborer for a company that supplies quarry pits. That's my business. That's not what America is about. Hundreds of municipalities, including Los Angeles and at least 36 other California cities, have built or expanded camera networks since the attacks of September 11, 2001. In most cases, Department of Homeland Security grants help cover the cost. In the most ambitious project, New York City police announced plans for several years ago to link 3,000 public and private security cameras across Lower Manhattan, designed to help deter, track, and detect terrorists. What a lot of rubbish, eh? This has nothing to do with terrorism. What this has to do with is the system they're bringing in that you have seen on the sci-fi movies, where the majority of the public are either starving or living in rubble, and it's a big army of black-clad goons with big, big guns bossing it over them. That's what it has to do with. But you can't tell the children. Can't tell the children. Now, I'll go to the phones now. And we'll talk to Stephen in Texas. Are you there, Steve?
Yes, I'm here, Alan. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Good afternoon, Adler. This is my second time calling in. I'm from Houston. I was calling in regards to last week's show you did about the dome that they're proposing to build over my city.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to know, really, what was the purpose of it? I saw Zeitgeist Addendum, the second follow-up to the first issue, where they had bubble cities, and it was, I guess it was super high-tech. They had light rails and things of that nature. But could you elaborate more on that? What was the purpose of building domes over cities?
Well, the long-term strategy, this first came out, by the way, and I have articles here. I'll maybe put them up tonight on my website, going as far back as 1960s, when they first brought this out in major U.S. Magazines. And now it doesn't go over, and this is the thing that struck me with the one for Toronto, you'll find that they don't go over the whole of the existing cities. But it's quite amazing that since Obama last week announced that they're going ahead to knock down a lot of the urban areas around the cities that no longer, he claims, no longer need all of this housing, and they concentrate people into the centers. Well, I guess it would fit into the new city, which is much, much smaller than the old. Right. That'd be the same with Toronto. But the future, of course, is to contain a much smaller population as well. Their idea, how they're going to push it to the people, is that it will stop UV rays, number one.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be much cheaper to heat the place in winter, air condition it in the summer, than having people doing it independently on their own. Now, Buckminster Fuller was the first one that was put out to the public. Again, they always give us our stars, and he influenced a lot of people, a lot of youngsters. He was the one who first came forward with this geodesic dome idea, and his early domes were even bought by many Russian communities. They could bring them across by big Chinook helicopters, drop them in forests, and then they were fully furnished. They just move right into them. But they want to do this with massive domes over the cities. The problem with the older geodesic domes is they leaked like crazy. Anybody who got them found it leaked like crazy. This new type of system they're bringing in is going to be mostly space-age technology, special sort of plexiglass stuff, and special frames to do away with that. But the idea, supposedly, is that everyone within the city will travel underground by subway, public transportation only. It will fit in with Agenda 21 from the United Nations. And the United Nations, by the way, I mean, I have articles here from them, and a book was sent to me from one of them, showing me these domed cities. And some areas are also going to put three dome cities. One will be for juniors, for children to be brought up collectively. The second one is after they've had their schooling and so on in the first dome, they get put into their workplace for life, and then they get put into a retirement dome. So everything is nice, clean, and tidy, according to a psychopathic control freak's point of view. That's the kind of world of order they want to bring in. It's for a brand new civilization, really. That's what it's for. And he claimed, too, they can control greenhouse gases and all this yada-yada stuff by filtration inside the domes,
That's what they claim they can do with the forest. The aerosol spraying is to deflect the UV rays, and it's going to protect us from global warming. It's a complete farce.
Yes, it is. It is. But do you realize once you get people into believing that this is the only way to live, and all you need is one generation, they will think it's all quite normal, and you can then keep the population down under rigorous control by authority and law and et cetera to save the rest. We're all in it together. Again, the same idea. And you could literally go on for centuries like that, never knowing there's a big, big world out there that's pretty pristine and untouched.
Right. Let's go back to what you're saying. Like how you said, give us our stars and how media is used to control us. Like you say, life imitates art. It goes back to the Simpsons movie that came out. That happened with Homer contaminated the city's river. And EPA had to put a dome over the city of Springfield, and it was under constant surveillance by the government. You couldn't go in the city, and you couldn't exit the city. So they show us these things in our movies, and then they turn around and do it in real life, and we don't think otherwise.
That's right. That's exactly right, yeah.
And one more point I want to make, Adam, was in regards to Obama. I'm an African-American, and of course, in our community, this is a milestone for us to have a black president. But I'm listening to your show and other shows, I see the big picture. I find it real hard to kind of explain it to other African Americans that Obama is just nothing more than just a repeat of Bush, Clinton, and previous other presidents. Because if you're a president who wants to inflict real change, you end up like sort of like John F. Kennedy. They will take you out. If you go along with the game plan, then you're allowed to stay in. Is that pretty much how it works?
No, that's right. I mean, it's the same system that put in every other president, that put Obama in, and he's standing up for the same boys, too. He's immediately he stood up for the banks already and rewarded them for looting the people. I mean, they always put their own boys in, you know.
Yeah, exactly. But it's false hope because they give my community the sense that we finally won, we finally achieved because there's someone who looks like us in office, but we don't really see the big picture that he's just another one, another for dummy, like all the other presidents.
Yes, absolutely. You'd never get in unless you were, yeah.
Correct. Yeah. Well, thanks again for taking my call, and I enjoyed this show, and the donation will be on the way.
And thanks for calling. Now, there's Alan from England. Are you there, Alan?
Oh, hi.
Yes.
Oh, hi, Alan.
Yeah.
Hi there, Alan. Hi, it's Alan.
Yeah.
How you doing, man? Yeah, I'm calling from Devon in England, and it's, what time is it here? It's like, well, 1:45 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, I have spoken to you before, and I've been in the news of business like you and all the rest of it. You guys are talking about Obama. I've only actually just switched you on, you know what I mean, online, so I didn't know what the earlier discussion was, but I heard a little bit about Obama, and I can understand a lot of confusion over that one. I mean, the global changes, I mean, we've seen a lot of changes with, you know, a lot of more police sort of brutality and things like that going on. You hear it, you see it and on YouTube, that kind of thing. Reports of, you know, terrible, you know, like a building up of something going on.
You're right.
On.
It's a building up.
Yeah.
Part of it is conditioning the public that this is going to be normal. And if there's no police prosecuted and really seen to be punished...
Then we saw the G20, for example, and someone got murdered, you know, someone got killed, actually got killed, you know, in the G20 thing recently. And these sorts of things, it's going on globally. I mean, this is the point. But on a more sort of like higher level, it's like a parting of the waves, Alan, mm-hmm. I feel. As a musician, I'm not I'm not a soldier or a politician, I don't know. And I don't, you know, I'm not an expert. You research all these things and you just look into it yourself and you make up your own mind, you know what I mean? And I'm a musician like you, and but there's like a parting of the ways of consciousness, if you like. There's a lot of people that are awakening, but at the same time, there's other people who are kind of like, I don't know, they're kind of, I don't know what the word is, deflating into this kind of denial thing.
Yep.
And they're just, you know, they don't want to know, and it's very weird to sort of observe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I've seen it in the public. I've seen it before when they went into denial, when the economy has gone really bad. Even in the 70s, I saw the same thing, when there were suicides in almost every street, and it was kept quiet except for the general public around them, and even neighbors didn't want to talk about it. It's almost though, as though you'd catch bad luck and get fired yourself or lose your job if you talked about it.
But the thing is, Alan, I mean, with respect, sir, I mean, you're a great, you know your history and all the rest of it. I've heard a lot about you and, you know, and listened to you a lot, and you that's what you teach, right?
Yeah.
But the point is that this is nothing new. This is what we've got today is a 21st century version of it, and that's what people should think about. Yeah. And using the lower levels of the brain, you know, and not the higher levels, and that's the key to this, is that people have got to realize what they really are and what, you know, and why they're here and all the rest of it, and that's what it's really all about.
Well, this is the thing.
It's that kind of revolution, in other words. It's not
Huxley,
a 3D...
Huxley talks about it. So did Russell. They said that an essential part of their plan was to promote apathy amongst the people.
Oh, I know. I mean, yeah.
And that's what people have to get over.
I mean, when you read books like that, you think, my God, they don't want anybody to go anywhere.
Yeah.
And so do they want them to remain on the top levels and everyone else to be... we understand all that. That's not hard to understand.
And that's what the public have to regain, is the fact that you are an individual, unique being. And if people start...
Well, I think that's the biggest secret of all.
Yeah.
The biggest secret of all is about consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it's about suppressing. It's like they're keeping a lid on it. And they're in withdrawal, Alan.
Yeah.
They're on the run, mate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they're trying to keep the lid on it, but there's the what's going on right now. That's my feeling anyway. And it's a positive message.
Yes, yeah.
I'll stay in touch with you.
Do that.
God bless you. You know, divine source creator, as I call it.
Yes, well, you take care of yourself.
Yeah. And you, yeah. And I'll let, yeah. And bless all your guests and everybody else. Bye.
Bye now. And it's true, you've got to regain the fact that you know, someone with a suit and tie standing on a stage with a bunch of troops around them is no more important or less important than you. And you see, we've been trained for years now that you're insignificant and you don't matter. We've got to say, wait a minute here. You know, you technically, all you guys on the stage are our servants, and put them back in their place. And we have the right to find our own destiny, personally and otherwise. That's the key to it. It's not to them to decide they want a controlled society of drones down the road. That's not living. That's death. That's death. Now we'll go to Clarence in Oklahoma. Are you there, Clarence?
Yes, I'm here, Alan. Haven't called in a while. Great to talk to you again.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, listening to you this evening. I pulled out a movie from my DVD collection that I saw when I was a very young person. This will date me, at the local theater when they had a theater in every town, you know, mm-hmm. instead of these big chain theaters.
Yep.
It's called Zulu.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Mm-hmm.
And as you talked, I suddenly realized people watch these things, but they don't, it's like a curtain in front of them. They see the front. They don't know what's behind it.
Mm-hmm.
They know the events. They, you know, the events are enumerated in history. It's based on a true story.
Hold on, and we'll come back after this break on that topic.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Hi, folks. I'm Alan Watts, and we're cutting through the Matrix, talking to Clarence from Oklahoma, who was mentioning the movie Zulu. You still there, Clarence?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah.
And what struck me, and I like that cutting through the Matrix thing, because that's what it is. When I saw that as a child, I was just a youngster at the time when I first saw it on the big screen.
Yeah.
But now that I've grown older, and now that I've thanks to the internet, which is the biggest encyclopedia in the world, I don't understand things thoroughly, but I'm learning.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I have learned, things are not what they seem to be on the surface.
Mm-hmm.
There is something behind everything, particularly in human affairs.
Yeah.
Human beings are not, you take them as they are, I take them genuine unless I find out otherwise. But going back to the movie was about, and I thought, you know, it's a big rah-rah movie, you know, and it's, you know, what, 11 Victoria Crosses were awarded for that
But a British...
more than unit. Any other action in British military history.
Yeah, against the Zulus, and they're in there building bridges for their train railroad tracks to loop the country for the big boys back home.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It finally occurred. You see, it came to me. This whole thing happened, you know, and people thought, ain't this great? Look, I served in the United States Air Force during the Vietnam War. I wasn't in Vietnam. I, fortunately, sat it out in Germany, but I thought I was serving the people. I thought I was serving a nation. Now I know what I was really serving.
Mm-hmm.
I was serving a cabal. And this is exactly, this goes back to Zulu. This is what they, that was the British Empire.
That's right. And the movie itself would make you cheer them on, thinking these are our guys, but they were not our guys. They were there, as I say, to protect the industry and get all the resources out of Africa. So how it's presented will distort the whole perception of the actual event and what was taking place.
Exactly. They just look at the surface. They don't know what's behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that difficult to find out what's behind it.
Yeah.
It's just, and then now I understand that my service was to an international cabal of corporations and bankers that are tied together.
Yep.
And the bankers, it's an incestuous relationship, but the international, corporations, they own the resources.
Yep.
And that's what it boils down to, is resources. There is no wealth in this world other than resources.
Yep.
Gold is that's a nice, fine thing, but there's only so much gold. But resources, that's wealth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what all the fighting is going to be about.
That's what's happening right now, too, is he loots the oil out of the Middle East. And this is ongoing, and I've actually published papers from the military calling it resource wars. And so you're right on. It's always been that way, but it's always to be put into the hands of the few. It's never for the public anywhere. It's always for the few who already own the resource supply. They add to the stockpile.
What always gets me, and I'll say this quick because I hear music coming up here. What gets me is that people think they're fighting, and they'll put out the banners and, the music and the bands. And they can fool the people. They can fool the average person to go fight for that.
That's where the ball was done. It's a tribal instinct to drum up in the public without telling the public the rest of the story.
Absolutely. Thanks.
Thanks for calling. A good book to read is Chaka the Zulu, excellent story on the founding of the Zulu Nation. From Hamish, myself, from Ontario, Canada, it's good night to me, your God or your God's go with you.